Canto 25. The thief raised both his hands when he said this, two fingers up from each the figs, and cried, "You get it, God? You know what you can kiss?" From then on all the snakes were on my side, for one looped round his neck as if to say, "You've said enough." Another, as before, bound up his arms and in its usual way attached itself in front so he no more could make a move that brought them into play. Pistoia, ah, Pistoia! Why not vow to burn yourself to ashes and live on no wicked moment more than you do now, you that are worse than your bad seed long gone, colleagues of Catiline? Through all of hell, its darkest circles, I saw not one shade so arrogant, not even he that fell at Thebes, Capaneus. So this one made his exit, speaking not another word. A raging centaur came past on parade. His shout was of the pitch that peaks and breaks. "Where is he, then, the crook?" I have not heard even Maremma has so many snakes as he had on his croup as high as where the horse form sleeps and human form awakes. Behind his shoulders, high up near the hair, a dragon spread its wings and set on fire, sending its breath down while it stayed up there, whomever it might meet. My master said, "That's Caucus, who beneath the Aventine made many times a bloodbath for the dead, and from his brother takes a different line, another road, because he stole by fraud a nearby herd and lured it to his cave. The herd belonged to Hercules, his lord, who heard the cattle lowing, and so gave Caucus, to end his mean streak at a stroke, a lesson with his club. 100 blows, not 10, were felt." But while my leader spoke, the centaur had gone by, and there arose 3 shades beneath us that we didn't see, till they said, "Who are you?" At which we ceased to speak, our thoughts on them entirely. I didn't know them, but by chance, increased by time, one had to name another. "Where," one of them asked, "has Chanfa stopped?" That said, to keep my guide's attention focused there, I held my finger upright so it led, touching from chin to nose. If you are slow to credit, reader, what I tell you now, no wonder. I, who saw it to be so, scarcely believe it still, but this is how it happened. While I kept the 3 in view, a serpent with 6 legs ran up in front of one of them and stuck to him like glue all over, so he bore this sudden brunt. His paunch was seized on by the middle feet, his arms by the front ones, while through his face fangs piercing either cheek were keen to meet. His thighs were where the hind feet found their place, and in between his thighs the tail was poked and stretched up over his behind. No tree was ever yet with ivy tighter cloaked than this shade with the beast disgustingly adapting limbs that hid the limbs they choked. And then, as if they both were hot wax, they stuck to each other in a dreadful blend. Their colors mingled and went either way, so both were one, with neither start nor end, and how they looked before you couldn't say from seeing what they had become. Just so, across the paper, close before the flame, we see a kind of colored darkness go, not black yet, but the white dies just the same. The other 2 looked on, and each cried, "My Agnello, how you've changed! You are not 2, you are not 1. For once they didn't lie. 2 heads were 1, 1 face shared in plain view. Only what 2 had not lost, and 1 pair of arms was made from 4 arms, and 2 thighs, 1 belly, and 1 chest were strangely there, shapes never seen before. When what had been was blotted out, all former features gone, the gross deformity that seemed to mean 2 things but nothing clear, slowly moved on. Still neither here nor there, but in between. As does the lizard in the worst dog days seem lightning when it streaks from hedge to hedge to someone trudging under the sun's blaze, so suddenly appeared from our view's edge a small and fiery, vivid serpent, black as peppercorn. Its path seemed set to strike the bellies of the other two. Its track soon fixed on one, and by its navel, like our own part for receiving nourishment when in the womb, it stuck to him, and then fell down before him and stretched out. Intent on what had struck him, he, the stricken, when he stared, said nothing. Silent, he stood still and yawned, as if by sleep or fever sapped of understanding, energy, and will. He and the serpent eyed each other, wrapped in one another's gaze, and also in the smoke that from the beast's mouth in a jet came pouring out to mingle with its twin that poured from the man's mouth, so their smoke met. Let Lucan now be silent when he prates about Sabellus and Nasidius, snake-bitten soldiers. Better that he waits to hear of this. The same for Ovid, who tells us how Cadmus turned into a snake, and Arethusa, fleeing nymph, changed too into a fountain. True it is, I take no umbrage. Ovid doesn't once transmute two natures face to face as they exchange their substance. By an impulse more acute, these two were moved, the one to rearrange its tail into a fork, the wounded one to blend its feet, the thighs together pressed, so close that soon the joinery was done, with no mark left by which you could have guessed at separateness. And then the serpent's tail, divided as it was now, took the shape of human legs. Its skin turned soft and frail, while the others hardened. Armpits were agape to take in shrinking arms. The beast's front paws that had been short grew long to match the pace of shrinkage, and the hind paws with their claws twisted together made the part men place away from view. His part, unbound by laws, put forth a pair of feet. While smoke involved them both with novel colors and supplied more hair here, and yet there the hair dissolved. One rose, one fell, but neither turned aside the baleful gaze beneath which each had gained the other's looks. He that was now upright lifted his face towards his temples, strained the skin till it expelled from being tight the excess matter that would form the ears from both cheeks, and then from the stuff still left there grew, as if the seconds now were years, a nose, and from the mouth, that lipless cleft, lips of due size appeared. He that lay flat advanced his snout, and then the ears slid back into his head like snail's horns, and then that which spoke for him, his tongue, began to crack and split in two. The other thing's tongue split already, unified. Smoke ceased to flow. The shade-turned brute fled hissing in a fit along the ditch, the talking one not slow to follow, nor to aim the human spit that snakes don't like. But then he turned his new shoulders on that one and said to the third, the one unchanged, I would have Boisso do what I have done, and do it word for word. Run on all fours along this very road. The dross of level 8 I had now seen. The dregs, the ship's least valuable load, had seen it change and interchange and mean one thing and then another. Should my pen fail in its task, let newness be my plea. And if my eyes were getting tired by then, my wits confused, still it was clear to me that though they fled in secret, these two were Puccio the cripple, sole one of the three companions privileged never to incur the agony of being thus reborn. And he who brought to you the sword and spur, Gavier, trading his wrath for your scorn, Francesco Cavalcanti, name to mourn.